BioInsights podcast.
This episode is called Tales, Tips and Teachable Moments from Application Support Veterans. I'm Charlotte Barker, an editor for BioInsights, and I'll be your host today. Now, cell and gene therapy scientists are under increasing pressure to achieve results faster and produce cells and cell products more cost efficiently. Field application scientists from key suppliers can provide invaluable support in optimizing those processes. So, in this episode, three veteran field application scientists from Corning Life Sciences share their expertise and lessons learned over decades of experience working with customers in cell and gene therapy. So our guests today are Austin Mogan, Catherine Seiler, and Chris Suarez. Welcome to the podcast. Could you start by introducing yourselves?
This is Chris Suarez. I am the Scientific Applications Manager for Corning Life Sciences.
So I am Kat Seiler. I am the Field Application Scientist Manager for the East Coast.
And last but not least, Austin Mogan. I am the Field Application Scientist Manager for Western US and Latin America.
Brilliant. I'm really looking forward to hearing your tips and tricks today. So the first thing that I wanted to ask, what are some of the common faulty assumptions or missteps that you've encountered in the field, and what lessons can be learned from them? I'll come to you first, Chris.
Absolutely. Yeah, I would say one of the common examples of maybe a misstep that I've encountered when working with customers is just being mindful of the sensitivity or the fragility of their cells. And a lot of the times this will manifest in results that are inconsistent or maybe even unexpected, right? And so what do I mean by that? A couple of things, making sure you have a robust cell bank. That's really, I would say, an important starting place and that you validated it, right? So you've gone through kind of the freeze-thaw, checking viability, making sure that everything went well at those stages. That's going to go a long way to make sure that you are just sticking with the best practices for cell use, right? When you're doing those types of experiments. And also along with that is tracking passage number, right? So this will help to minimize that variability. And throughout the cell expansion phase, the other thing is to be aware of the cell stressors, right? And so again, just like I talked about, not just expansion, but even freezing. So I talked about making sure that freezing process was, you know, quality control, both the freezing and the thawing. So making sure you check that when you're thawing and assessing viability. And then also on the expansion piece, not growing your cells too dense or confluent before passaging. So a lot of the times that puts unnecessary stress on those cells and can manifest again in those inconsistent or unexpected results. Now, I've talked about the cryopreservation piece, but even some of the missteps we've seen there is it's not uncommon for lab personnel to use things like double styrofoam packaging, right? Kind of repurposing styrofoam packaging materials in an effort to mimic a controlled freeze thaw cycle. Now, we have things available such as like our cool cell products, right? That are much more controlled that will help to, you know, make sure that you have a quality freeze process and that you're able to make a quality and a robust master cell bank. So just kind of some examples that I have there.
Great answer, Chris. Thank you. And Kat, what would you say?
So Chris used a word that I like a lot, which is mindful. I find that I tell customers pretty frequently to be mindful of the protein concentration of their extracellular matrix, such as Matrigel. This is a biological product, and the protein concentration will be a little bit different from lot to lot. And sometimes customers assume that every lot has the exact same concentration. So I always encourage them to pay attention to that lot number. We will tell you the protein concentration for that lot number, And by being mindful of that, you can ensure greater consistency from experiment to experiment and make sure that you are always using the exact same concentration.
Great. And Austin, what about you? What are some of the common faulty assumptions that you've come across?
Sure. Yeah. So for me, one area where I've seen difficulty in the past is around the handling of scale-up vessels, so multi-layer vessels like cell stacks and the HyperStack technology and even the Hyper Flasks. Each of those examples are vessels that are often used in scaling up cell culture and bioproduction. And they're made out of polystyrene plastic. Because they're larger and when they're filled with media, they can be heavy. Sometimes people don't realize that they're fragile. And so I've run into some examples of our clients handling the vessels in not a very fragile way, and they can break. So this is a area where we just try to train our clients to be careful with those vessels and making sure that they are unpackaging them carefully and laying them down carefully on the lab bench or in the biosafety cabinet, because they can crack and they can break. The last point I'll make here is that we do a pretty extensive validation around the packaging. So when they're in their box with the foam, they're quite robust. But once you take them out of the box, they're, like I said, more sensitive plastic vessels. And so you just want to be careful with them.
Maybe one thing that I would add on to that. So Austin made a really great point on kind of the vessel itself. So this is another common question that we've seen pop up and can lead to some of those missteps. So a lot of the times when we're engaging with customers, giving seminars, this question will come up is how many times can I reuse this cell culture vessel? Right. And so if it's a single use plastic, just like he mentioned, you know, the robustness testing around even packaging, same thing applies to that surface. Whether it's a vessel that you're using for, you know, culturing the cells or even things such as our microcarriers, again, for expanding the cells, these are single use by design. And so there's a reason behind that, the consistency features, right, which rely on things such as surface treatment. So those, if you attempt to reuse more than one time, those surfaces can be altered or diminished, right? And so once the cells are grown on that surface has been changed, right? So continued use is going to introduce process variability, because of course those cells are growing and excreting ECM on that surface, whether again, it's a planar vessel or a microcarrier, right? And that's going to lead to alteration. And this can lead to that misstep where you have, you know, morphological changes that you're seeing to the cells, which often can be indicative of molecular changes, right, that impact overall quality and productivity. And so lesson learned from that is that, you know, this attempt to reuse a single-use vessel can indicate that a customer has, you know, strayed from that best practice standard. And again, we want to make sure that we're kind of bringing that, and we'll bring this up in our training and working with our customers, that the risk is you're introducing variability. And of course, we want to minimize that, so that you have really consistent results, and that your experiments are reproducible and robust. And overall, it's going to save you time that you may otherwise invest, right, in trying to optimize that variability, which contributes to, you know, overall cost.
So I wondered, what's the hardest or most rewarding thing you've done in support of a customer? Austin?
AAV-based gene therapies have really come to the forefront in the last 5-ish years. And many of the technologies provided by Corning, such as the cell stacks and HyperStacks, were utilized by our clients to push those gene therapies through clinical trials and to commercialization. And one of the areas that was very enjoyable and rewarding to me was helping some of our clients design a scalable manufacturing process for the production of these gene therapies, particularly around the production of a gene therapy to treat spinal muscular atrophy. This is a rare disease that affects one in 10,000 babies born in the United States, and it's actually the leading cause of death from a genetic disorder for infants. And so helping enable scientists to develop and manufacturing and manufacture these therapies where we see a direct impact on, in this case, infants and babies and patients' lives is incredibly rewarding.
Definitely. Thank you, Austin. And what would you say, what would be the first piece of advice for a customer that's just beginning an experiment or a process? Kat, what would you say?
So we work with such a wide variety of customers that are doing so many different types of experiments. But I think one unifying piece of advice that I could give them is to work backwards. So if you think about the end point, that could be a certain number of cells that you're trying to grow. Maybe that is a specific setup for an assay, even if it's a pretty small scale. When you work backwards, you can start to map everything out and then start to think about what each step is going to look like.
Absolutely. And what's your advice for a customer who has a common scenario, someone who's completed three runs of their experiment but got quite divergent results? How should they start troubleshooting, Austin?
Well, so as many of the listeners probably know, if you're working on the bench, there are a lot of variables in our experiments, particularly when we're working in the biology space. And so for me, I always recommend taking a holistic approach. So map out each component of your experiment, each input that goes into that experiment, and really driving towards determining where there could be potential inconsistencies. For example, how were your cells frozen and previously handled? That's something that Chris mentioned earlier. Are you using fresh media with serum? Are you using the same lot of serum? Were there any issues with the equipment? For example, did your CO2 incubator run out of CO2, or were there deviations in controlling to that CO2 set point? How were the raw materials or reagents stored, and could they possibly have been expired? A few other considerations are there any other aspects of the cells, how they were handled, passage number. So there are a lot of different things that could potentially impact the variability in experimentation. And so it's good to look at each of these methodically and determine the root cause of that variability.
Thanks, Austin. And now most of our lives have obviously been changed to some extent over the past couple of years. How did the pandemic change how you engage with customers? And what of those techniques will you continue to use post-pandemic? Chris?
Yeah, it's a really great question. So I can give you some examples of what we've done at Corning. One of the things during the pandemic, so the field application team was, you know, of course, unable to travel on site to a customer. So the first question was, how do we continue to provide that support to our customer without the ability to be on site? So what we did was really started to look at providing those solutions for some of the detailed, you know, training and things that we would do in the lab. And out of that, we realized there was a need to have improved videos and things that would support our customers that way. So we utilized a couple of different examples of that technology, one being the Microsoft HoloLens. And then we also use some 360 degree cameras. And so different applications for each of those. Of course, the HoloLens allows us to do kind of a first person video recording of in-process procedures and steps. So that helped us, and that Insta360 camera, the 360-degree camera, allowed us to, again, as a single operator, record detailed process steps throughout the lab. And so we created a lot of customer-requested video content using both of these technologies. And by generating those videos, again, helps to give much more detailed information that was being requested for our customers since we couldn't be on site with them. One example there, we generated a sequence of videos on our Corning Manipulator platform. Again, based on customer requests, they wanted to understand the timing required for each step in that process, right? And what that technology would look like. So this took, you know, a good amount of effort on our end and working with the customer. They were really flexible so that they could get that kind of real world experience in our lab of what that overall process could look like for them. So I think that was a really great, you know, integration of technology to help meet our customers' questions. Now, in addition, so you asked the question of, you know, what of those techniques and technologies would we continue to use post-pandemic? So I mentioned, you know, that's something that once we realized it's a very powerful set of tools and technology, we've now outfitted our applications lab with multiple webcams, right? Not just the 360 cameras. I mentioned we have the HoloLens for first-person video capture, but we now can capture more complete workflows by having webcams at different locations throughout our lab. And so this, again, one example there, when we're doing a cell stack or hyper stack training, there's elements of that training that involve being inside of a biosafety cabinet, right? And so of course we can pre-set up these camera locations and sites within our lab to go through different stations, if you will, right? So from the very origin of how do you start connecting your vessel to end use a harvest of the cells out of that vessel. We've got different stations set up with these webcams where we can engage a customer remotely and give them that training, right? And so this will continue. We've utilized this post-pandemic already. And that kind of touches on a separate point where this also feeds into our sustainability effort. So something that, you know, if there is something we can do more rapidly to address a customer need, and it doesn't necessarily require an on-site visit, we're happy to use this model and we can continue to engage, again, cut down on some of that travel, but also to meet our customers' questions and demands more rapidly. So as long as they're okay with that, again, if they need us on site, we're definitely going to be there. But this does give us flexibility to kind of address those questions more rapidly if that's a need as well. Some other scenarios that will continue to exist. So I mentioned already the HyperStack. So we've gone back and done some updated training videos with these technologies. But also we've engaged remote strategies during the pandemic for our X-Series installation and also our demos. And we followed a similar path with our MatriBot bioprinter. So we do have the ability to engage in a remote fashion with our customers to support demos and even installation for some of these platforms.
Yeah, that increased use of video sounds really helpful for customers. What would you say to a customer who asks, when is the right time to engage with my supplier's field support team and how can they help me? Chris?
Yeah, another great question. So I think here, the first question is kind of this right time to engage. So starting there, regardless of where you're at in your process, right? So whether it's very early R&D phase or process development, or even in the manufacturing stage, I would say each one of those is going to have unique challenges. And we've been engaged at each one of those levels. The earlier, the better, right? I think in you know, Kat mentioned this kind of this working backwards approach. So even in that early, you know, conceptualization of what your target goals are, you know, you might have a cell number or a specific surface area or a yield you're trying to get with your viral vector production. I think the earlier you can engage the field support team, the better, right? Because what the FAST team is able to do is to help guide our customers through that decision-making process. And again, this is going to result in a more rapid process optimization, right? And so I guess the next part of that is really what does that look like in your question, right? How can they help? So part of that, you know, enhanced ability to speed up process optimization. I mean, one thing at Corning that is definitely an advantage, each member of our North American FAST team is a PhD trained scientist, right? And so that means that there's an in-depth subject matter expertise on the products and the practices that they are going to share when supporting customers, right? And so that right there, that expertise that I mentioned, that's going to help to significantly reduce the amount of time that's spent by our customers when they're looking for information that can be supplied much more quickly by the FAST team, right? And so that information, just some examples of what the FAST can help to kind of expedite, any information ranging from product specifications, right, options on how to scale, closed system customizations, assay design, we touched on a little earlier, and even providing in-depth training on our broad portfolio of products, right? I gave the example of kind of remote engagement with CellStack and HyperStack, all the way through to our manipulator, right? Our FAST team covers each one of those areas. And so I think the earlier in the process that a customer would engage the field support team, they'll really be able to take advantage of each and every one of those areas, again, to help expedite, you know, any questions they have when they're designing their process. And then one thing additional, right, that I would add to that is that the FAST team at Corning really can provide guidance specific to the current stage and future goals. And again, this should be considered at the very outset of your project design in optimization discussion. So therefore, like it's really valuable to have the Corning FAST team involved in these conversations early in the process mapping stage, because this will help to integrate consistency into the design right from the outset.
The only thing that I'd like to add there is that Chris mentioned the North America field application scientist team and the variety of expertise that they offer. I just want to touch on some of the application areas to highlight that diversity. So we have folks that come from a cell therapy background, from a background in viral vector production, in assay development. So we have a really diverse offering of expertise that can be employed to help with your process development, with your assay development, and really ensure the success of our customers.
Great. So yeah, lots of support available, and just make sure you engage earlier rather than later is the message I'm getting there. So to finish up, what's the one piece of advice that you would give to a customer? Austin?
So this is a bit of a throwback and maybe obvious to most people that are listening, but do not mouth pipette.
Short and sweet. And Kat, what about you?
Yeah, I will echo what Austin said. Definitely don't mouth pipette. That's a great place to start. But in the larger context, we've talked a lot about the areas of scientific research that we can support and the benefits of being rigorous with your science. And when we talk to customers, sometimes you need to take a step back from science. You need to embrace your humanity. So what do I mean by that? We spend a lot of time helping people troubleshoot when something goes wrong. And sometimes at the end of that troubleshooting process, we realize that someone has been human and they've made a mistake. It's not fun to admit that. We're all strapped for time. There are a lot of resources on the line. And so it's very feasible that people make mistakes. So if you're troubleshooting and you happen to realize that that's what you did, that's fine. That's something that's easy to fix. Don't do it again. It saves everybody's time from, you know, going further down a rabbit hole of looking at 17 different possibilities. If the mistake is, oh, I forgot to put it back in the freezer. Great. Onward and upward.
Absolutely. I think those are wise words for life in general. Thank you, Austin, Kat, and Chris, for sharing your insights with us today. The episode was brought to you in partnership with Corning Life Sciences. If you enjoyed listening, don't forget to subscribe to the BioInsights podcast.